You're listening to 515, the Ultraman podcast, the show that invites you into the lives of people who make up the Ultra family. Here's your host for these conversations, co-race director of Ultraman Canada, Larry Ryan.
Thanks, MJ. Today I'm going to flip the script, and I'm going to start with our Ultraman Canada athlete profile of Abbe Kelkar. And then we'll finish off with the third and final part of my conversation with the legendary Ultraman announcer, Steve King. I would like to spend a few moments setting up today's athlete profile, as it is following a different format. My guest, Abbe, is from India, and he does not speak English, so he has a translator with him. I will overdub the translator answer with Abbe so that you will hear him in his own voice, but also get the translation. Prabhat, his translator, does add some information to his translations. They are not verbatim. Prabhat is also the head of the Mandesi Foundation, an organization that is helping Abbe to reach his athletic goals. I also have a few questions for Prabhat about exactly what this foundation does. Abbe is definitely not your typical Ultraman athlete. He is a milkman in rural India who grew up learning about the environment around him by going into that environment. He shares this knowledge with his own daughters and the students at the Mandesi Foundation. The background that he reveals in this conversation will definitely draw you in. And once you know more about this man, you will feel compelled to follow his Ultraman Canada journey and cheer him on to succeed. But before I give too much away, let's get into this conversation. Today's athlete comes from a place and a background that is quite atypical to the usual Ultraman competitor. From his village in Satara in the state of Maharashtra, I'm excited to bring you my conversation with Abbe Kelkar. Hello, Abbe and Prabhat. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
So, Abbe, you are billed as the milkman to Iron Man. What I want to find out is, what was your life like when you were still the milkman prior to Ironman? Like, how did you get interested in triathlon? What was happening in your life at that time?
So what Abbe is saying is that he grew up around the village in Satara. So around his villages, there are a lot of forests, a lot of streams. And one of his part, like the best hobbies when he was growing up, to go for swimming in a water wells and lakes, get beehives, do fishing, go in the mountains just to spot some animals as well. So he loved the nature life. Now, while growing up, you know, there was a school, but never kind of got into a sporting culture. And when he was older, he was, as he said, like as there is that he was selling milk. So while selling milks, he would regularly start doing short runs. And then somebody told him that, why don't you start, if you're doing short runs, then why don't you go for a half marathon? And he continued of going on half marathons. Then he did a full marathon. And after doing that, he felt it was very, very interesting because he started like running, and that kind of became his passion. Even though he was selling milks in the mornings, whenever he would get a time, he would start running from the city. Then some people also felt that, is he like crazy or something? Because people didn't know much about running in the area, and everyone would question him. And he says that even he didn't know. He was like, okay, I just like it, I'm running it.
Right.
And then it kind of, the dream of becoming a half Ironman was the first goal. Okay, something is different. Because he liked swimming, he could kind of put his interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, he doing half Ironman and then the full Ironman.
That's the story of all athletes, that, you know, usually they start with one discipline and they enjoy that. And then they move on to the triathlon and move up sprint, Olympic, half, full, and now ultra is the dream, which is just fantastic. Prabhat, I would like to ask the next question to you. This interview will obviously be centered around Abhay as the athlete. However, I know that you have played a part in helping him get to be an Ironman, and so as your foundation. So can you just explain a little bit about your foundation and your connection to Abhay and how that began and what you've done for him so far?
The idea behind starting the organization is never to help athletes to win medal. There are two goals of Mandesha Champions. Number one goal is that we just don't want our athletes to be an international player, winning medals, being in the Olympics. Of course, if that happens, that's great. But we want them to be a big, good human being, because that's a big aspect of who we are as an organization. And we want to see India, the developing country, to be not just GDP-wise powerful or something. But when it comes to gender, when it comes to equality, when it comes to diversity, I think Indians should be on number top. And that's what's the matters. That these are the most valuable core values for us. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. And then number two is giving opportunity for young girls and boys, especially for the girls, to play sports. We want them to play sports. We want them to be breadwinners of their family, especially young girls. Because in India, you have young girls getting married at the age of 14, 15, 16, 17. Of course, now the rate is going down and down. But still, for example, about 3 weeks ago, I met a girl who got married when she was in ninth grade, forcefully by her parents.
Right.
And then, of course, we helped her to go to the police, you know, do all the things. And then now she's staying with us in our academy and she's getting trained for sports. So some of the athletes have come like this. And that's the goal of Mandeshi Champions, is that we are providing opportunity to play sports, being a good human. What we do in Mandeshi is that we provide them from food. We take care of the nutrition part, where we are providing them protein-based diets. We are providing them proper coaching for field hockey, track and field, athletics, swimming, and wrestling. These are the five sports we are doing. Yeah. We are providing the proper coaching, as well as going beyond that. We also make sure that they get jobs. So we teach them about science, biodiversity. We teach them about astronomy, physics. They know about gravitational wave. They know about how the black hole works. So the idea is to, from history to science, they need to know every single thing. They do debates about LGBTQ. They put the points on those things as well. The reason why, that they need to be aware of those things. But we also make sure that we don't tell them what is right and wrong. We just give them scenarios and they need to figure out mm-hmm. what is right and what is wrong. The idea is to make them a good human being. Right now at Mandeshi Champions, we have about 7,000 athletes working with us across. From the majority of them are girls, and that's the whole point. Mm-hmm. We give them opportunity, to give them dignity, opportunity to earn, so all those things. And we are now starting new programs. Like, we have a portable planetarium, which is something exciting coming in August.
Oh, exciting.
And that's the reason why we are doing this, to increase curiosity of children of India, rural right. India, mm-hmm. and imagination. So we are doing that. We have painting courses. We have arts, a lot of different things at our facilities. So it's like a science and sports hub altogether.
That sounds fantastic. And I'm guessing that it's still the case in India, where if you live in one of those rural villages, that you are less likely to get those same opportunities to get an education or to learn some sports.
Yeah, so in some parts, definitely it is. I'll just give an example of that. So end of 2016, so it's about just 3 years ago, I was traveling to a small village where they were a sugarcane cutting family, and they were cutting sugarcane. And you won't believe it, what I witnessed there. So there's a 13-year-old girl who, in a teenage, who was supposed to actually, you know, play sports, go to school. Instead of that, she has never been to a school in her life. She's cutting sugarcane from 4 a.m. in the morning till about 4 p.m. in the evening. So about 12 hours. And it's a tough job, because when you're cutting sugarcane, the sugarcane, there are thorns in it. Then you have venomous snakes. You always have to be alert. You always have to be quick. Then after the cutting sugarcane part, she's not able to go to school. Her name is Nakusa, which means unwanted daughter. So the parents have given her name, which means unwanted daughter, because they wanted to have son. I have heard these names in my community. I've seen this. What struck me was that even though all this is going on with her, she's never been to school, she don't have that many friends, and unfortunately, she will be ending up getting married maybe in 1 or 2 years. But mm-hmm. even though after all this, she was playing with the ball, which was made of clothes. And she was playing a dodgeball, basically.
Oh, yeah.
And she was really happy. So I realized that even 15, 20 minutes of sports can change someone's just, I'm not saying the whole life. And of course, mm-hmm. by giving them sports and giving them opportunities for beginning, there are girls who have changed their lives. Like, for example, there's an athlete we have named Sarita. She's a field hockey captain of the state team. She used to be a shepherd. So she would herd sheep, go with her parents for about 250 miles in a year walking in a search mm-hmm. of water. She knew how to track wolves. Today, the same girl, Sarita, is the captain of the national field hockey team. She mm-hmm. earned about twice or thrice the family income. So she has that freedom. She's 19. She's not married. Her elder sisters got married when they were 16 and 17. Mm-hmm. So things are changing. But of course, there are a lot of children who do not still have education, who are getting married at the age of 16, 17. So mm-hmm. that's also there. So it's not totally gone, but slowly things are changing.
Abhay, can you tell me a little bit about what it is that your daughter does for sport and how she's connected to the Mandesi Foundation?
Abhay has two daughters. One is Swara, one is Tapas. So Swara is the elder one who is in boxing. And she is, since last 2 years, she's been practicing boxing in a club in Satara,
okay.
in the city. And of course, Mandesi is supporting her when it comes to equipment, shoes and everything, diet and all those things. From the childhood, Abhay has always wanted to be a friend to his daughter from the beginning. So as Abhay, when he was growing up, when he went to the streams and rivers to get crabs and fishes and in the mountains, to do treks, small treks and things like that, he always felt that his daughter should do the same thing, to get close to the nature, to understand the nature. It doesn't have to be that she has to like it, but he wanted her to be passionate about it. So since when she was younger, he's been taking her for walks in the parks from the beginning, walks in the streams, showing her how to catch crabs, how to do fishing, things like that. And now he takes her for forest treks. Even though she's 9 and 10, she does about 1.5 hours of trekking with him, and they go together for the trekking. Apart from that, she's always liked jumping around and doing different exercises. So now both of them go together for boxing. For his daughter, Abhay also started doing boxing, because then one day she told him that, I want to do that, and that was a boxing when she saw. Since then, they have been going, and then he had never done a boxing before, but he felt that if I want my daughter to do boxing, then I should also know a little bit about the boxing sport.
Yeah.
That's where he thought an idea that, why don't I do boxing as well? Now they go together, they eat diet together, they drink milk, both of them love milk, but they drink milk together. That's their favorite part, and they spend a lot of time together. And he feels that I should not be just her father. I should be her friend as well. So she can share things with him about sports, about personal life. And the other thing he mentioned, that he started going to boxing not just to support her, but of course to kind of show her that your father is also doing this with you. So your father is always going to be there for you, do a lot of things together. And then the other thing he said, that he wants to do boxing with her. He wants to run half marathon, Ironman, so she can be proud of her father. She can see her father as a role model. And also she can tell her all the other friends in the schools and things like that, that, you know, my father is athlete. He mm-hmm. does do boxing with me. And then he was saying that, how many of the Indian, like a lot of parents, go together with their daughters to play sports? Not many. And he really enjoys it. She enjoys it. And that's kind of, for him, it gives him a confidence. Mm-hmm. There's some Marathi word he said. It's like close to confidence. So that's gives him a confidence by going with his daughter.
Excellent. Yeah. So who is the most competitive person in the household?
म्हणतात की तुमच्या घरात सगळ्यात जास्त कॉम्पिटेटिव्ह कोण आहे, म्हणजे कॉम्पिटेटिव्ह म्हणजे काय तुला?
तसं
ऑफ कोर्स हर एल्डर डॉटर शी इज रियली फास्ट एंड एवरीथिंग, बट व्हेन इट कम्स टू कॉम्पिटिटिवनेस इट्स द यंगेस्ट डॉटर हू इज 2 years old. He feels that she's, because she's always like, you know, she has that look on her face, which shows that I'm not going to let it go. She doesn't do any sport. She's very young.
Yeah.
But she feels that the youngest one is the one who is more competitive.
Okay. That's very interesting. That's great. Give me a little bit about the area that you're living in and the area that you train in. What's the setup for you? Is there like nice paved roads to go ride your bike on? Do you go to the swimming pool? Is it a lake? How do you do your training where you are in Satara?
He's saying that Satara is like a kind of village and town combination. It's a big village in a way, very big. It is surrounded by multiple mountains. So there are a lot of hills, a lot of lakes, a lot of dams. So it's fun when you're doing running and running and swimming. He's been doing running uphill. Recently he did 27K run like 3 days ago, like a long one. And so he's been doing running in the mountains, and it's a lot of fun to do that. And they're uphill, so elevation is also high. Weather is also very chill. So running has been really beautiful and fun. Swimming, there is a swimming tank, there is a lake, and there is a dam as well. So he can do long distance swimming, and he's been doing swimming there since the childhood, in the dam and the lake. Fortunately, there are no crocodiles, that's what he said, so that's easy to swim there. But when it comes to cycling, that's a bit challenge, because there are no cycling trails or cycling paths in India. So you have to do cycling on a highway, and Indian highways are not made for cycling or even actually for vehicles. It's potholes. It's a lot of traffic. So it's big. It has become a big, big, huge challenge. And unfortunately, last year, before his Ironman, last year, he was training just I think 1 or 2 months before the Ironman. One of his partner, while they were doing cycling, got hit by a truck. And then he passed away. So cycling has always been scary and risky because there are no trails and no paths. So that's like a biggest struggle when it comes to cycling.
In Canada, you might see some deer or moose, you know, the odd snake or things like that along the way on the course. But I'm guessing where you are and where you train, you might see some other kind of wild animals. Like what are we going to see if we go for a run with you on the trail in Satara?
आता आमच्या इथं प्रॅक्टिस करताना बरेच वेळा घाटामध्ये.
So where Satara is,
बिबट्या दिसतो, लेपर्ड दिसतो.
He said that the whole wildlife is very close to his heart, and the whole Satara region has always been full with biodiversity. There's a tiger reserve, there's a leopard reserve, there's a Indian wild bison, which is largest bison in the world. You have varieties of snakes. So when he goes for hiking and treks, he has encountered leopards, sloth bears, not a tiger, snakes, deer, rabbits, things like this when he was going on hikes. But while swimming, there are crocodiles, but he doesn't go to the place where there are
smart
crocodiles. But he has rescued one crocodile when it was injured. He kept it for about 1.5 years and then recovered and then kind of released in the river. But he's always been passionate about wildlife from the childhood. And just 3 days ago, he said There was a leopard behind his house at like 1 a.m. in the night. While not, he was not doing any running or something, but there was a leopard just behind his house.
Right.
Now there, he was giving us an incident which happened about a couple of years ago. He also supports and helps the forest officers for anti-poaching. And so once he got a call from forest officers and the team of forest officers that there is a poaching happening in the next state called Goa.
Mm-hmm.
Of tigers, and we need to go and catch those poachers. They're selling some skin of a tiger or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went with them to Goa by a car, about 7 hours drive. And they got there, forest officers, because when they saw a lot of poachers together, so they got a bit scared and they told him and his friend that why don't you guys go and we'll stay. So they didn't accompany them.
But the forest officers did not accompany them.
No, did not accompany them. And that's very common in India. Things like this happen. And then Abhay thought, since we are here, let's see, we just go and we'll try to catch those poachers. So Abhay and his friend, they went as a fake customer to buy the skin. That was the whole plan. They went as a fake customer. They had a small... not smartphone, but the small phone. Before smartphone, you know, there used to be smaller phones with no screens, just black and white. They had that phone. They had called the forest officer and put it on a speaker just to hear what's going on. If there's something bad happens, then they can at least call the police. So they did that. They went to get those, like, as a customer, as a fake customer. And then the poachers realized that they're not real customers, then they started to have a fight with them. Eventually, he kind of ran away with the skin, Abhay and his friend, and they ended up going directly to the police station. They also got a bit hurt in that fight, but they got the people arrested. So that was one of the highlights of him doing this. And he's been always, as I said, he's been always passionate about biodiversity.
Yeah, that's a great story. It tells a lot about who he is and what he stands for.
Yeah. So,
during our conversation off the air, Abe expressed that he was a little concerned about the cycling component of the race. As you heard, cycle training conditions for him are extremely difficult. He asked if anyone would be willing to help him virtually with his training for the Ultraman Canada course. Now, listening to his story, I hope there are Ohana members out there who can step up and offer him some advice. In this next section, we talk about the help that he is getting, including a former Ultraman athlete. However, I think he would really appreciate the advice from an Ultraman Canada finisher. If you would like to help Abe, please contact me at 515ultraman@gmail.com and I will connect the two of you. Obviously, you're getting your help from Prabhat and his foundation for some of your training and things like that. But do you also have some coaches that are assisting you to train you in triathlon and help you to get from Ironman level to Ultraman level?
Mala running
made. So for running, there's a retired captain. It's a retired army captain who used to be a trainer for army personnel when it comes to track and field in India. So he's retired right now. So he's training him for running. So even it's at like 2 a.m., 3 a.m., whenever they start running, he's always there with him. And it's free of cost, of course. He is passionate about it. It's not that he's charging him something.
Mm-hmm.
He's always there with him to also give him water in the nights. And then he's on a bicycle, scooter. He's always on the scooter with him. And they start at like 3 a.m., 4 a.m. start because India is very hot. You cannot run after 9 and 10 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's how they start running. That's how he gets training from them. Then also there's a swimming coach called Chorge. He is there. He's the one who's always been there since his childhood. And he teaches him techniques about short distance, long distance, how your hands should be, how you should pedal. So he does all those kind of training from a coach called Chorge. Then, of course, there is an Ultraman trainer, Kaustubh, who has been, but also only virtually so far. This is the first time we're going to go and meet him. We've always done virtual coaching since COVID because it's been COVID since, you know, the Ultraman thing came.
Right,
so
yeah.
So we're not able to go and meet him. And so these three are coaches. And of course, in next month, I'm giving him another international level swimming coaches to train him. And he's going to come and stay in my facility from next month onwards. Because there's a lot of course, selling milk is going on. Now he started transporting glass in a small tuk-tuk. So he's also doing that work. But I think from next month, he will be stop all the work and just focus on training 24/7.
Okay. Wow. Excellent. It's great dedication. That's amazing. When you went to Norway to do Ironman, I understand that this is like the first time you've gone on a trip, the first time you went in a plane. So what is that whole experience like for you? Is there a culture shock involved in that? What can you just give us a little bit of how you were feeling when you took that trip?
Not even been to a lot of Indian cities before. And then he said that it was first time for him when he remembers taking off the plane from Mumbai. Told him to put a belt, and he didn't know why they were telling him to put a belt. So he was a bit scared, like, what's going to happen? I have never been to the flight before. And then he has always seen like how the plane goes in the air, and how he always was curious to see how it will look from the top to down. So he was just looking. He was not sitting at the window, so he was trying to like move over to the next passenger and see what's going on. So the next passenger was a bit annoyed by that because he was staying. And then he told him, can I have a look for 5-10 minutes? So that was the plane experience, which was very cool, and he really enjoyed it. He was scared in the beginning that how it will look like or how it will happen. Would he vomit and things like that? But that didn't happen. So he was happy, and he was really he was really interested in the whole flight. And then when he got out at the Munich, the first stop they had, and in Munich he had to speak regarding the passport control, he had to speak some English. So that was a really tough time for him, because he had to kind of show them around, and there was, I think, fellow passenger who helped him to kind of at the passport control to talk about things. And then he had also never seen the airports before, so for him everything was new. A lot like, you know, the airport was so clean and a lot of lights. So that was also kind of interesting for him. So he was just watching everywhere and just sitting at the airport. He loved just that part, just being and watching other people go around. And he also saw that people were like with small bags walking fast. Because in India, you don't see that much. In Europe, probably because he saw a lot of people walking faster, always on walking faster. They don't look here, there. They just like do their thing. And that was kind of unusual because where he comes from in India, people always like, you know, come to you, talk to you, and things like that. So that was very interesting. And then when he got to Norway, the climate was cooler, chillier. There was a glacier, water, like every single place, there was lakes, huge lakes. And from Oslo, he traveled in a car to where was
Haugesund.
So he traveled in Haugesund, so he saw a lot of glacier water. It was the first time going into the water that cold. He had never swum that cold in his life before. Right. But it was good that he had a swimsuit, so that helped him a lot. And then cycling was a bit challenging for him because he couldn't speak, so he always had a thought, what if I get lost? How would I kind of come back to the main route? And I'm just adding my words here for some. Like, to be honest, I also felt that. Like, because I was there at the day of the competition, I felt that. I don't know if he'll be fine with everything. Only thing for us was cycling, because we had shown him the route a day before, and he was already confused there. So that's, and then he said that he saw a lot of sheep there. So that was very new, so many sheep everywhere. And it was raining a lot at the day of the competition. So then it kind of little bit, you know, wiseled his confidence, just a little bit. But then end of the cycling, then he knew it, that I'm going to do this. And then he finished the whole thing. And, you know, that was like the best moment for him.
What is it that you hope to get out of coming to Canada and doing the Ultraman?
Ultraman karaycha karan asa ki mi
prateka. He has a passion. That's number one. Number two is that, as he said in the beginning, that this is for his family and his daughter. He wants his daughter to look at him as a role model. He wants his daughter to say that my dad has done this and he's very competitive and I want to be just like my dad. So that's one of the major goals. And the third thing is that there are so many people who have done marathons, half marathons, and Ironman as well now. But in Ultraman, he wants to sit in the, there are only 9 people in India, as far as we know, who have done it. So he wants to sit in those 9 first 10 category. Mm-hmm. Even in that, all these 9 people who have done it, are one is an actor, like a Bollywood actor. The other one is a, like a very well-known doctor. The other one is like a very well-known government high official. So all of them are have significant background. They're already someone.
Right.
In his case is totally different. He said, I want to be a common man, the man who otherwise people would never think of him as, a, as an Ultraman.
Mm-hmm.
Because he doesn't fit into those categories of what the people have done. So this is something not normal for him, but this will also motivate a lot of other people like him who are not that, not, it's not just about richness, who are not on those categories, who are just normal people in India doing wage laboring and daily jobs. And they can also do something beautiful like this. They can also follow their passion.
Well, I'm certain that he will inspire many, many people, and probably not just in India. What an amazing story. I thank you guys for sharing that with me today. Listeners, if you want to see Abe in his Milkman to Ironman YouTube video, please check the links in the show notes. Well, once again, guys, thank you both, and I look forward to meeting you in July.
So thank you so much. I really enjoyed having this conversation with you, Mark.
What happens on the road gets told at the awards banquet. And now those stories are being shared with you. It's time for another crew story. Today, you're going to hear from Matt Hill. He'll be speaking about Chad Bentley, who we heard in episode 1 describe his Epic 5 race. Here is the story from the crew side of that same race.
Hey there, Matt Hill. And the athlete that I had the absolute pleasure to crew for is my buddy, Mr. Chad Bentley. And I'll take you to the Aloha Islands, where he was on day 5 of the Epic 5, which is the 5 Ironmans in 5 days on 5 of the Hawaiian Islands. And here we were, day 5. He had been the piston, the like Mr. Consistency, Mr. like just getting it done day after day after night after day after night after day. Like, you know, we're talking like a couple hours worth of sleep, you know, at most points. I think at one point, I think his least amount of sleep at one point was like, you know, maybe like 25 minutes. You know, he even fell asleep during the ride, he said, on the last part of the ride on day 5. So, you know, figure that one out, right? Going down the King K Highway or the Queen K Highway, sorry. You know, and like actually falling asleep and having a nap, you know, in your tri bars. I think that's pretty epic. But from the crew's perspective, this one particular moment to me just kind of solidified the whole amazing journey. So we were, like I said, you know, the last day here, the last Ironman, the last marathon, and we were heading back towards town. We could smell the town of Kona, you know, breezing in the distance. You know, middle of the night, you know, we'd done the all-nighter, and, you know, probably a couple hours from the finish. You know, I'd had a pretty good system with my taller-than-I friend Chad with his nutrition. I just sort of, you know, go alongside of him and he just put his hand out and I, you know, hand it off to him. But on this one point, I thought, oh, the truck's up there. I'm going to get fancy. So, you know, I run up, put the nutrition right on the front of the truck. And as I turn back to run back to get behind him, just to make sure he goes forward, he literally does a full side plant into the side of the truck. And I'm thinking like, holy shit, he's totally passed out. And so just as I'm about to, like, maybe, you know, call a medic, he literally does this little kind of like hop, skip, but he kind of does a barrel roll right along the side of the whole truck, doesn't even skip a beat, does a little bit of a hip scop, you know, right off the end of the truck, grabs the nutrition, keeps going forward, takes a big, huge sip. And then I'm like, dude, what happened? He goes, whoa, that was really weird. I think I saw a dinosaur back there. Yeah, it kind of freaked me out. I was like, we're like, whoa, dinosaurs on. Well, okay, it is the Aloha Islands, you know. It is Epic 5. We are about to finish, you know. So, you know, the rest of the night, we just, oh, my God, we just laughed so hard, you know, about that moment. Because it was really kind of like it was the antithesis of the whole experience. It was just, I mean, you know, without sounding cheesy, I think I understand why they call it Epic 5 now, because it really is epic. It's something that, you know, I hope lots of people get to do. And, you know, especially to say from our crew members' point of view, it's such a privilege to crew and also help somebody in their quest, you know, to get through the finish lines.
Thank you for that, Matt. And if you have a crew story that you would like to share, please get in contact with me at 515ultraman@gmail.com, and I'll tell you how we can get your story on the air as well. So whether your story is a funny one, a serious one, or something in between, we want to hear them, especially if they embody the Aloha, Ohana, and Kakua of the Ultraman races. Welcome back to part three of our conversation with Steve King. In this section, we're going to be talking to Steve about his day job, which is a clinical counselor, and he specializes in PTSD, addiction, depression, and anxiety. Now, it's probably no surprise to most of you out there that many athletes or people within the athlete's family are dealing with these issues, as many people throughout the regular population do. And one of the things I would like this podcast to be able to do is hopefully have a few open discussions with athletes that want to talk about their struggles or their strategies in dealing with mental health, and sharing those ideas, so that if there are other people out there who are struggling along those lines, that they can find some ideas about how to deal with it and realize that they're not the only ones out there that are dealing with it, even though they're athletes of a high caliber, that even a high caliber an athlete can have a mental health issue that they want to deal with. If there are athletes looking for help, obviously they should seek a counselor in their area.
Yeah.
But some people might want to check out your approaches, Steve, to how you look at these things. You've done a number of presentations in the field. You've also written some books. You have some courses online on, is it Udemy? Is that
how Udemy. Say that. Udemy. I've got even an Audible course now. They contacted me from England and asked if I'd do one for a thing called Listenable for people who just want to use audio as opposed to watching video.
Oh, yeah. So maybe just give us a quick, where can we find that? Like, you've got some books and stuff. Where can we find those?
Well, the books
as well?
And the courses, you can go to my website. They're online there, and you can just click on to order those. But the best thing to do, if you check them out, they have a full price. But nearly every third or fourth day, it's about 10% of that price. And so just wait till they're about $14, $15 or something. Seriously, I think I've only had one person who paid full price, and everyone else, they wait. And I don't blame them. That's what I've done, because I've downloaded loads of courses myself. I think this is one of the great things we can do during the course of this pandemic. I've taken more courses last year, despite still working. I'm still working full time. I've just finished a course on schizophrenia, which I just finished last night. I did the exam. And I'm doing a new one on sleep right now as well, because lots of my clients have difficulty with sleep. And these are university. I took a course from Yale on addictions, which was right up to date because they had all the latest medications they mentioned as well. And I'm very much involved with that aspect with a wonderful doctor here, Dr. Jeff Harris in Penticton, who's one of the leading authorities on that. So I've had the pleasure of working with him. So I've been very fortunate and gifted from many people's experiences. my clients are just wonderful people. The majority of them are very, very talented. They're just very sensitive and obviously susceptible because the world can be overwhelming at times.
And I think in my day job, I'm seeing that as well, with the anxiety levels rising through almost the entire population of young people today. My own personal thought is that it might be due to over-loving parents a little bit, in that nowadays there always seems to be those parents that want to be those snowplow parents or take away all the obstacles from the child's life because they don't want them to have to feel pain or deal with bad things. And it seems to me that most of the young people today, that they, because they don't get the opportunity to deal with that in little pieces along the way, that even the small things can shut them down. Is that something you might be seeing in your practice?
Yeah. You're right. Nowadays they would call that helicopter parenting and stuff, right? You know, we have where kids are not allowed to overcome things or learn how to surf different things, so to speak, the day-to-day stuff. For them, it's like you can offend them by telling what is a perfectly normal joke, so to speak. And that's changed a lot. I know we live in a woke nation now in every sense of the word. I get that and I appreciate it and I'm happy with it. But we've still got to learn to have a good laugh. Because if you think of endorphins, there's only three ways basically to get them: exercise, laughter, and acupuncture. So, you know, let's have a lot more laughter.
And a lot more exercise.
Yes. But one of the things I do, I usually stay up to at least till midnight. And the reason for that is not only am I a night person, but I like to go to bed after a good laugh. So 11:30, I'm watching the late night commentators. And I really appreciate that because it makes you feel much better than being dragged down by some of the stuff that's going on in the world.
Yeah, you don't want to be watching CNN before you go to sleep.
Although I'd rather be watching that than one of the others.
I think we'll have another break here, and then when we come back, we'll talk to you about one of your favorite pastimes, and that is music.
Awesome.
If you are enjoying my conversation with Steve as much as I did, then I have great news for you. He'll be back every episode with a short story of his choosing. In our next episode, Steve talks about the very first Ultraman race and gives us some details on the winners. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss even a single Steve King story. And now, back to the final segment of our conversation where we talk about his love of music and his love for his life partner, Gene. And in between those two topics, he somehow weaves our entire three-part conversation into a beautiful metaphor encompassing all of the topics we've spoken about, done in a way only Steve King can.
It keeps me running till the twilight of day. It keeps me running, come what may. It keeps me running in the Packer alone. It keeps me running now.
And that is Steve King performing with one of the bands he's played with, the Headband. And he's a great music lover like myself. You obviously play music. I don't play music, but I like to watch music and hear and listen to the great bands. So I'm wondering, can you share with us what exactly do you play? When did you start? And was it to get girls?
Well, I've had a drum set for quite a while, and so I play a bit of drums. I'm not the greatest, but I can keep a beat. I've got an acoustic guitar here. I've got a bass guitar, and I've got now a keyboard, because one of the things with the pandemic, here I am. I'm presently 72 years of age, and for years and years I've been saying, and I asked people this question. I was running a panel a couple of years ago at the Victoria Marathon, panel of incredible athletes, Olympians, etc. Evan Dunphy was one of them. And my last question to each of them was, if there's anything else you could be other than the talent you obviously have as an athlete, what would it be? And nearly all of them said playing a musical instrument or singing. And when I thought of this myself, you see, I have for years wished I could have learned the piano. So here we are in the pandemic, and I'm taking all these courses for my education, and I'm sitting there, and all these things keep coming up on Facebook about, you know, learn the piano. And so I thought, I'm going to check one of them out. So just before Christmas, I actually pressed the button. So I've got a keyboard, and I'm sitting there learning scales at this time. That's what I'm doing, just going up and down scales, because I'm hoping that sometime I could get to play the piano. Even if I'm 95 and I could play one or two songs, it really would make me happy, because I do love music. I've got a sound system down here like you're in a nightclub, and there are times I can yank it up to the degree. We've got a very old house, so we've got these big rocks at a foundation that if our neighbors, and if I crank it right up, the neighbors can only hear a bit of bass, but it's like I'm back in a nightclub in London.
That's fantastic. So you're basically going to be a full band by getting the keyboard then. You got the drums, the bass, the guitar, and
now I'd love that if it were possible.
Your keyboard.
Well, and Bill Head is the head of the Head Band, by the way. He's the one who sings and plays guitar on there. And so we did put out a CD. So that's the only thing we've really done. We played a number of gigs. But I also, years ago, wrote the Iron Man song. And by the way, if anyone wants that, that is the Iron Man Canada song. It is on my website. It's a free download. And we did an instrumental as well as the voice for that. And I'm hoping there's a guy who did Ultraman Canada that I am hoping is going to put an Ultraman song together. He and I discussed it. Bill Head and myself did one for the Peach Classic. We did one for a Texas triathlon as well for those guys. So it's neat if someone has an event and they want to put a song specifically for an event. You see, it's nice to be able to do that, because if you're an athlete or the organizer, you can think of the words or just write them out as poetry, get them to rhyme a bit, you know, and get a chorus. It's not, mm-hmm. I know it sounds easy, but it can be. It seriously can. If people can. Yeah, then it's neat to have a song that represents your event. That's the way I look at it. So that hopefully we'll have an Ultraman song soon.
And I guess being that sport is such a big part and music is a big part for you, that they tend to intertwine, and your influences when you're writing your own music, I guess, would be from there. The song that we played into the segment with Running in the Zone, I understand was inspired by some writing that you were doing.
Yes, we actually put a book together, myself and a guy called Dan Cumming, which was called Running in the Zone, and it was for senior athletes, basically. And so we had 26 contributors to that book. Sadly, Dan Cumming used to live in Summerland. He passed away just a year ago, and that was in Jamaica. He was there to do the Jamaica Marathon. He was 73 years of age, so sadly we lost Dan, but his family keeps in touch, and they turn up at finish lines because, interestingly, their son-in-law and the grandson of Dan's are all triathletes as well, so it's a big circle, big
all
family.
Keeps going around in the circle of life, yeah. just as more of a personal question now, is what's some of your favorite musicians that you've seen live, and what are some that you haven't seen yet that you're disappointed about?
If there were one disappointment, it would be that I didn't see the Rolling Stones live. I missed an opportunity, and Penticton had Ringo Starr and his all-star band here a couple of years ago, and I had to be at a race. That was a huge disappointment as well. But I have seen so many, especially in the 60s and 70s in London. I used to be up at Wardour Street all the time. The Marquee Club, the Whiskey A Go-Go, a lot of those clubs. But the Marquee, we had an incredible number of people come through there. The Moody Blues are one of my favorite bands. Saw them perform there. The Who played there. You know, so many. In fact, David Bowie, there was a David Bowie
anniversary weekend.
Well, David Bowie used to play with a group he called the Lower Third. We used to walk out after song number two or three and go to the pub while he was playing. It was that bad. And I say that with all due respect to David Bowie lovers. I really like his stuff now, so don't get me wrong. But in that phase of his musical career, it was folky, it was slow, it wasn't gelling well for anybody. And we used to see a band or come back. There used to be a band called The Action that were our favorites there. There was The Move. They were a big band at the time as well. So lots of great bands that I saw there. And I go to concerts when we can. We have a great facility now here at the Events Center that we've seen some great musicians. And we have the Dream Cafe here in Penticton, which we're hoping will get open again. We've seen some amazing musicians there. Men at Work, their lead singer has played there, Colin Hay. You're probably well aware of him. Mm-hmm. But I love anything from reggae. I like opera. I like everything in between. But you can go down the rabbit hole, and I found myself doing that just the other night. I heard something from Simply Red, and then I went on and just watched some stuff from him, and I thought, man, he's got a great voice. Then I saw a thing out there with 10cc doing live, you know, and went to that. And I will often go to something that will just say, yeah, I wonder how that person sounds now. Dion of Dion on the Belmonts. He's got a brilliant, he's 80 years of age. He's come out with one of the best blues albums that you could imagine, and with all sorts of people that have contributed and worked with him. It's starting with Joe Bonamassa on the very first track, but there's some fabulous work that's being done out there by a whole host of artists. So I'm into anything. And the other night, UB40, I was watching them, and then I realized there was a song came out a couple of years ago, I Want You. Well, Ali Campbell is a singer, and he was the lead singer of UB40. So, you know, you can go all over the place watching incredible artists. And then you've got people like Cat Stevens coming back and renewing some parts of his career, you know. Look at Fleetwood Mac and what's happened there. A guy's on a long skateboard singing along, gets onto TikTok, and the next thing you know, that's blown up. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's I'm kind of looking forward to seeing all the great art that comes out from the COVID quarantines, not just in music, but in all forms. And, you know, it's starting to come out now, obviously, but I'm sure there'll be a lot more as well. Yeah.
Well, you can't get enough when you think of also people like John Lennon. I had the good fortune to meet him outside the Marquee Club. A Rolls Royce turns up and out steps John Lennon. He had a chauffeur at the time. And you go, wow, you know, and what he contributed musically. And here we are, you know, he and George Harrison. When you look at the concert with George, you look at Imagine and the songs, the Double Fantasy album, et cetera, et cetera. These people, along with Eric Clapton and the greats that have gone before. And look at some of the young kids that are out there. People send me drumming videos of, you know, eight-year-old girls playing against David Grohl in Foo Fighters. You know, I love that stuff.
Oh, yes, yes.
It's I've just tremendous. Yeah.
Well, I guess as a drummer, we're just on the one-year anniversary of the death of
Neil Peart.
Russia drummer.
Yeah, Neil Peart.
Neil Peart, yeah. Yeah. I'm knowing your music stylings, I'm going to guess that you enjoy a little Rush.
I do. And what a great concert they had on HBO there for quite a while, the Time Machine one. And Neil Peart, to realize that man could take some of the songs he did and play note for note when he was all over that kit, all over it, and note for note. Mm-hmm. And you see the people in the audience who have been to so many of their concerts that they're doing the same thing.
Just playing the air band,
It's, it's so incredible. And you see, this is why we have to realize how fortunate we are as well, that we have the gift of art. There's the visual art, there's performing arts, you know, and we are so fortunate we live in a world where we can take these things in. And to me, a lot of my clients are artists. They're sensitive people that get affected by a world that at times seems overwhelming. And that takes us to athletics, where athletics can take you out away from that because it's a form of art in itself. And the race, like an Ultraman race, is a form of art. It's a canvas from the race director through to the crew, to the athlete, for the organizers, the volunteers, and the locations. It's like a traveling circus. So you have traveling shows in art shows, but to me, this is like a traveling circus as well. And it comes to fruition. And at the end of it, we're sitting back at awards and we're embracing what has just happened, and hopefully in a good way. And sometimes it's not a good way. There are people who have had great disappointments, but the wonderful thing is many of them come back. Mm-hmm. You know, stories like Scott McDermott, the Warrior Code, he's now had a film made about that, the documentary. You know, there's those types of things where people have had a really rough time, a major accident, Christian Isaacson along with Scott, you know, but they're coming back into the fold. So when you love the event and the sport as much as these people do, you're going to return year after year after year as much as you possibly can, or get connected, or even if you're sitting at home and you can't be there, you can provide possibly some advice or inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I and that's obviously what this whole thing is about with the Ultra family once again. I guess I'll finish off with one last question for you, and that's more of a personal family one for you. And you touched on it earlier about how important your wife Jean has been to you. And I think that kind of runs through all the threads of the discussion we've had today, because she was obviously a part of supporting you as an athlete, because at times we know these ultra endurance athletes can be pretty selfish people and they need a lot of support. And I'm sure she was there to support you in your races. And then as a announcer, she's like side by side with you all the time. And she's like literally standing by your side. As you've gone through your work career, I'm sure that she supports you and gives you that time and space and help along the way to get all of that in place. And then again, in your music, it's come out. You've actually dedicated a CD to Jean as well for one of her birthdays. Maybe just tell me, or more importantly, tell her what it means to you to have such a great partner to support you in all these different facets of your life.
Well, as you say that, you've made me realize, you know, sometimes we need to stop and sort of appreciate what that means. We've been together since 1974, got married in 77. And at that time, at the end of 74, I was planning, because that's why I came to Canada, I was going to go around the world on a shoestring. I barely had any money and I needed to work. But I met Jean and I said to her, basically, would you consider coming around the world with me? And we were going to backpack with no way of really, we didn't have a backup. Could you come to England with me first? We'll get a job. You'll meet my family and we'll save up and then we'll begin our journey. And so we spent 3 years literally going around the world together, living out of DOS houses, cheapest accommodation you could imagine anywhere. We spent a month in Bali near the end of the trip, living in a losman for $2 a day, including breakfast. We were eating with Hare Krishnas in different places wherever we could, seriously. And so you know that you could get along with someone when you've been under those circumstances. But when I started putting races together, Jean was the registrar. She did the timing. She looked after our club newsletter for years. She did the newsletter. When I started the magazine, she sent out all the subscriptions, kept all the addresses, kept all the business stuff going, you know. And Jean was never a sports person. I say that with all due respect, you know. She's very talented in many ways, but it wasn't something that appealed to her to get out there and run or do that. She does more now mm-hmm. than she ever did then. She will get out to the gym 3 times a week and go up to the track now for a walk sort of thing. But she loves the people. She loves the engagement and really loves the athletes as well to see how they're going to perform. You know, we know how scary it is for many of them to be there for a first time, especially taking on a mega challenge like the Ultra. And so over the years, you know, and there have been times I've been rude to Jean. I acknowledge that. As partners, we can sometimes be rude to each other. Yes. And so we have to decompensate a little bit to sort of go, okay, what's going on? Okay. And so what I tell clients sometimes, and I have to remind myself, is over the years, what I need to be aware of, and I am very well aware of it, is Jean is also my very best friend, as well as my partner and my wife. And so when you see someone that lens, it often changes the way you talk and treat them. And I can be a person who can have three or four things on the go at the same time. I can be talking to you. I can have music going on here. And my head is also doing something over here. Now, Jean doesn't think that way. And so she can get upset sometimes if I don't stop everything and sort of give her my full attention. But in a race situation, right, you can't do that. When you're commentating, I can't be stopping, starting, you know, and trying to organize things. So sometimes I'm just pointing at something, and that doesn't seem too polite. But you see, in the context of what you're doing, you have to do what you do. So Jean and I had to work out those types of things. Or if I'm thirsty and I've been on the mic for hours and I say, could you get me a cup of tea? Well, Jean's not my servant, but at the same time, there may not be anyone else around to grab a cup of tea. Do you see what I mean? So sometimes those things have come into it, but we've always reconciled, and she is everything to me. And so I did write that one song for her as well that's on that CD, Thanks to You, My Wife. And the first song on that is Jean, which was a very well-known song. So I felt that was something very special for me to let her know how much she means to me. I revere her, to put it mildly.
Yeah, she's a wonderful, wonderful lady. And I think maybe we'll go out on that song as a way to pay tribute to how she supported you along the way.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Larry.
Sit alone and think of me when I'm gone and out of sight. It will never be for long. I'll be back to put things right. Whatever happens, you are mine. No rough words will make us part. That's the way I know we feel. You are always in my heart. Sit alone and think of me.
If you like what you heard today, please tell a friend and be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We'd appreciate it if you'd rate and review the show while you're there. Drop the names of the people you think we should interview, and we'll get in touch with them and make that happen. Thank you for listening to 515, the Ultraman podcast, a production of 55 Enterprises, brought to you by Ultraman Canada.
I will be with you.